Now we are joined in the programme, or on it, by Brenda Morgan, Head of Business Development at City of Derry Airport. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
Things come in cycles and up at City of Derry Airport. Talk of the flight from Dublin and all the little fires, irons in the fire. It's a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very positive, and the only way was up after COVID. So very much we're up on our 2019 figures, and
that's pre-COVID figures, because that's the real comparison, isn't it? That's great.
Absolutely. And we've just introduced a new carrier in terms of EasyJet with three new routes, and also have our charter programme. Our London Heathrow obviously is offering that hub connectivity. And as you say, we have Manchester with Ryanair, and that's growing. Demand is just huge at the minute because I think people definitely want access from their local airport, from a convenience point of view, from a service point of view, and it's great. We're just delighted to see people owning the airport and joining us in terms of their journey.
Yes, and a huge amount of those passengers are from Donegal as well. You talk
absolutely
of local airports. Obviously, we've got the Donegal airport locally as well, but City of Derry Airport is seen as the local airport as well, and I've utilised it many times over the years.
Donegal's huge for us, and lots more in terms of growing that market, especially obviously with the Dublin. And we're here to really complement the existing
Let's bring Martin in. Martin Turbett's with us of Top Flight for Schools, and the launch of Top Flight for Schools 2027, the ski program to Verona in Italy, is taking place this Friday. Talk to us about it, Martin. Good morning to you.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thanks for having me. We're having our launch for 2027 season this coming Friday. And as Brenda says, we are trying to promote flights out of the City of Derry Airport. We're trying to get local schools in that area to commit to ourselves so that we can have the community, just the flights so close at hand. It's stress-free for the teachers to know that their local airport that they want to fly is either at their front door or literally within less than an hour to the airport.
And this is kind of maybe an unfamiliar model to the general public in that these are, and it's not the first year, we're launching, or you're launching 2027. Yeah. This has been happening for the last couple of years. Talk to us about the sort of the logistics, what's happening in terms of the flights and getting people on them and all that kind of stuff.
Our business is basically to sell ski trips to schools. That's my business. And what teachers want is, naturally enough, value, good value.
Convenience.
And convenience. Mm. And what they need is, they around this particular area, Donegal, Derry, Tyrone, to some extent, a little bit of Fermanagh too, they want to be able to travel to the airport as quickly as possible. And that makes it cheaper for them because, let's be honest with you, coach travel is getting a lot more expensive. So if they can even get the parents to drop off the kids at the airport, that is brilliant for them. So then the next thing what we do is we and the sales team will try and get schools around this area to just consider what we can offer, and we can have great, great resorts.
But these aren't scheduled flights as such.
No,
that's the, and
thank you, Craig, for highlighting
that. That's the bit I was trying to get to.
Yeah, thank you, Craig, for highlighting. These are charter flights, and these will, for this year coming in, they're going to be leaving on the 17th of January for about 4 or 5 weeks, okay? And they leave on a Saturday, come back on a Saturday.
Right.
And they're 180-seater. They're with a local Spanish airline, Volate. And we worked with them last year, and they were brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's an impressive thing, chartering a plane.
Yeah,
You know, but obviously that means bums and seats.
Correct.
You can't do a Ryanair and get 88% to 93% capacity, right? You want everyone in there. But that is part of the package, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, so after that too, where do you stay, right? You know, where am I going to stay? There's various levels of ability here. You know what I mean? Do I have to buy a whole load of equipment? So do you do, is it end to end and all the bits in
we
between?
We do the whole package from start to finish. You leave your school, you come to the airport, we will then fly to mostly to Verona or one of our main airports in Italy or Austria or the United States. We will then coach you to the hotel, and with you throughout the whole week, we'll have a resort manager. That person will stay with you, and we are one of the few companies that actually have a resort manager. They used to be called reps in the past. Mm. These resort managers will deal with any issues that happen. Included in the package will be your hotel. You can go full board, and that will be breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You have 4 hours skiing available, ski hire, boot hire, helmet hire, and ski instruction, all included.
And we're talking 2027 now, because obviously, you know, people, the schools will know, they'll know what classes come up, and it's probably often transition year and all that kind of stuff.
Correct.
So they'll know. So obviously in these things, the further you plan ahead, obviously schools will contact you directly, right?
Yep.
You're obviously very competitive in terms of convenience, right?
Yep, that would be the case.
Does that come at a premium, or are you up there sort of competing with some, if a school decided to try and organise something itself?
I can honestly say that we would be one of the most competitive companies that deal with schools. And I would be very, very confident. I'm a retired teacher myself. I travelled with numerous different companies, and I feel totally privileged to be working with Top Flight for Schools, because we have a motto, and it is a genuine true motto with us. It's personal.
Before I bring Brenda back in.
Yeah.
Is there any capacity for people who aren't with schools or presumed or what? Because there's going to be adults listening to this.
Yes.
And write stuff for
kids. And I really appreciate you highlighting that. We in Top Flight for Schools, before COVID, did educational trips, sports trips, ski trips. Now we're solely ski trips. But any adults that do come to us looking to, wishing to go on a ski trip, we would ask them to go to our sister company, Top Flight. They will do adult packages that will cater
same
for
thing,
all their needs.
But it's
same
for, things. And of course, too, maybe there only. Might be different offerings.
Correct.
As well.
Correct.
Right, okay. So it, what's the significance of this from the airport? I mean, it's more traffic, isn't it, Brenda? I mean, so that's yeah, it, and more activity.
It's more traffic, but it's special traffic, Craig. I mean, there's nothing like seeing the school groups arrive,
imagine.
The excitement,
just
the
when
buzz,
those,
the chatter.
Sliding doors open and just
yeah.
to hear life,
yeah.
don't you?
And our yeah. staff love it. Yeah. It's all our own staff at the airport, so that they can't wait, obviously, for the first flight and then sure. that returning flight. And it's really special because the parents get very involved. It's not as if to say they're saying goodbye to their loved one. And for some, this is their first trip away solo, which is also very emotional, obviously, for the parents. So to leave them off at the airport rather than putting them onto a coach for 3 hours, and especially on the way back. So
and
not
parents
only-
really see the significance of these trips, again, particularly for transition year, because in my family and those that I know, you don't, it's the money doesn't come straight out of the bank account,
no.
right? You
no.
you find a
yep.
way of getting it together
yep.
or whatever.
Yep. True.
But transition year is I'm such a big fan of transition year, and see these school trips too. They come back with different groups of friends,
yes.
and
yep.
their confidence is through the
absolutely.
Roof. And it's like, see, mom, see, dad, I, yep. I you know,
it's life skills.
And I think it's really valuable in relation to that as
yeah.
well too.
Yeah.
And I know we move heaven and earth as mums and dads to get them on these trips because we see the benefit of them.
Yeah, my daughter went on the Top Flight trip last year for the first time, and as a family we didn't have the luxury of skiing because of injuries in the past, etc. So, but she's addicted to it now, and now she is very passionate about the memories that she made on that school trip as well, and with the teachers as well, because it's a very, very special time for all of the group and the dynamics of the group. For us, it's really special whenever as well they come back to see parents standing obviously at the arrivals gate with big banners and balloons, some with flowers, and it's sort of like, oh my goodness, this it just
I'm
is
such
amazing.
A bad dad.
Banners
and balloons.
Banners, balloons,
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. And the whole family turn out. So, yes.
I'd be straight away. Says, I told you could only spend.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but listen, hey, there's all different types, right?
Yeah,
but you know, it is really, I think the main thing what we're saying is that it's the local convenience.
For sure.
And, you know, the feedback we get from teachers as well is
I was
no
just
stress.
About to highlight that, if you don't mind me, Brenda, like the feedback that we have received from teachers that have
but
used.
But that's easy. I know why, because it takes the hassle out of it.
Incredible.
You know what I mean?
And for the schools, the expense, obviously, of a coach as well. Yeah. But also for the teachers, because the teachers can meet and greet at the airport, reassure the parents, and then obviously, because we're a small airport as well, the teachers can allow the students just to relax
and departures.
That's a huge
advantage.
And they're not lost.
No, they're not lost.
You can't get lost.
But it's a huge advantage. I do love travelling out of your airport. Knock Airport kind of has the same vibe to it as well.
Yeah.
You arrive, it's just calming.
For us at Tough Life for Schools, I feel it important. I want to take this opportunity to thank Brenda and our team. We've been dealing with City of Derry Airport for the last 3 years, and the warmth that we have received.
Yeah, I think it's very special
incredible.
How much Brenda's embracing this whole thing, on not
incredible.
Just on a business level, but on a sort of a community level as well.
Yeah.
I think you're very lucky to have her,
if
you don't mind me saying so, and vice versa.
I think that's why we're here, though, Craig, is, the airport is here for the community.
Let's discuss a very important issue now, Brenda.
Yeah.
Freebies. Right. So if you need any flights tested, any new destinations... any glowing endorsements of it, I'm your man.
I'll bear that in mind. You'll be top of the list.
The top of the non-existent list.
Yes, absolutely. I want to make that clear, because no doubt the email will be inundated.
I am only messing you. So 2027, you could get in contact, get 2027 in the bag.
Yeah.
Right. And normally the flights, because obviously it's a skiing holiday, is it January and February? You did mention this.
No, funny enough, one of our busiest weeks now is... the week before Christmas, around the 11th,
for schools
12th,
as well,
12th, 13th, 14th.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's when our season starts.
Mm.
We have a lot of high resorts that we can use that particular week, and it is getting really popular. So I cannot stress enough what schools really need to do is plan early. And the sooner you plan, it gives there a longer time for the kids to make their payment. We have a portal system. So, if you leave it late, then big payments have to be made in a short period of time. So.
Yeah.
That's the emphasis that I would want teachers to realise.
This is a business, but it's clear you couldn't be making more effort to make it easy as possible for schools, the teachers, and the students as well.
Yeah.
And it's also a fantastic way to support the airport, Brenda.
Yeah, I think it's also important to say, Craig, though, is that we source our partners, our tour operators in particular. Top Flight's an award-winning partner, and the delivery of their service is second to none, which is why we work so closely with them. That's really important for us. And I mean, if you look at their NPS, which is 86, that's ranking in the league of Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah.
So to have that delivery, because it's important that we're
especially
providing
over time.
The best.
Yeah. Over time shows the level of consistency.
Absolutely.
Firstly, to you, Martin, remind us how schools get in contact. I presume it's schools.
Yeah, we have an email address. If you email schools@topflight.ie, schools, schools @topflight.ie. Trust me, a member of the team will get straight back.
And from your perspective, Brenda, just talk to me a little bit about some of the flights out of the airport, because sometimes, people used the airport, then didn't for a while, maybe post-COVID, and they're not necessarily familiar with, where you get close access to. So just, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but just some of the routes available from the airport now.
Yeah, so we're delighted to have London Heathrow three times a day, and that onward connectivity with 19 other airlines has been hugely popular since it was introduced almost 2 years ago. We have Liverpool, which is increasing to four times a week come February, which is fantastic to see. And then we have Edinburgh and Birmingham. Edinburgh's three times a week, and then Birmingham's twice a week. That's a relatively new route, and it's growing high in demand, so we're expecting that obviously to increase in capacity, but it was only introduced.
Well, that's a litmus test. It's great, isn't it, when you start going, right, we can add additional planes here.
And then Dublin's so exciting for us. So
when is that anticipated to actually be up and running?
Latest will be October 26th in terms of operational, but we expect that perhaps to come forward. So main thing I would say is, keep in touch with us, look at our social media. Everything will also be on the website, but feel free to reach out, and because we'll communicate that in terms of the timeline. It is a government funded route, so as a result of that, the tendering process is just about to start in a number of weeks. So as a result of that, we'll be announcing that who that carrier is.
Never thought it was coming back, really, so closely. It's really good to see it.
So exciting, and demand
is huge. It's not that I would have known. All All right, brilliant stuff, Brenda. Thanks so much for calling, Dan. And thanks for being such good friends of us here at Highland Radio. I know above my pay scale, we have a great relationship, which is fantastic.
You're a great partner.
So Brenda Morgan, Head of Business Development at Eva Derry Airport, thank you very much. Martin, it's great to talk to you. It's also very clear, which is nice, and it's not always present. It's very clear that this is something you're very passionate about.
Absolutely.
That's obvious in that. And I think maybe your background as a teacher and all that helps and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So the launch of Top Flight for Schools 2027, it's a ski program to Verona in Italy, is taking place this Friday. And secondary schools across Donegal are being encouraged to get involved for the 2027 season. But it's a bit of 26 into 27.
Yeah, correct.
To be absolutely clear.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, and it's from the city of airport straight into Italy. And the party begins, the fun begins for me when you get into the car or on the bus, but genuinely when you go in through those sliding doors of the airport.
We're here to welcome you.
You're free.
By God, you will be welcome there.
All right, guys, thank you so much for calling
Craig.
In.
Thanks
really
for
appreciate
me.
It. The programme can throw up coincidences from time to time. Obviously, we were just talking about the excellent access into the northwest that City of Derry Airport provides and the importance of it. Equally, if not more important, also is road access and the A5. Every moment this road is delayed, unfortunately, it puts lives at risk. It is, without doubt, one of the most dangerous stretches of roads out there. Niall McKenna is chair of Enough is Enough A5 campaign. Thanks for joining us, Niall. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
I just want to reflect, if possible, on the recent meeting you had with Donegal County Council in relation to the A5, Niall. I suppose the purpose of the meeting and what information you were able to share.
Yeah, well, the meeting in Donegal County Council offices yesterday in Lifford was actually a cross-council committee of the councils that are advocating for the delivery of not only the A5, but the N2 in Monaghan and also the 10T project in Donegal. So there were members at that meeting from Monaghan County Council, from Mid-Ulster Council, from Fermanagh and Omagh Council, from Derry and Strabane Council, and also from Donegal County Council. So that group has been in existence for several years now and has been advocating for all three schemes. So, look, we met with them yesterday morning. They wanted an update about where things were at with the A5 specifically. So we had a good meeting with them yesterday, and obviously that group came out at the end, and we're again just reaffirming the commitment of their group to the scheme going ahead.
Now, it was a real setback recently this year, perhaps some oversight or whatever. We've done the autopsy on that, but the reality is that the next appearance before court to try and get things moving, well, it started this morning, didn't it, and will continue then in December. So what was the sort of situation with the proceedings today, Niall?
Yeah, so there was a case management hearing in the High Court in Belfast this morning, which is just finished quite shortly there. And I suppose the two things that were coming up at that were two new parties have asked to be granted intervener status in the actual appeal. As you know, our group, the A5 Enough is Enough group, were granted intervener status in the last case. That very much gave an emphasis on road safety and gave a voice to the families of victims. The two new parties that have asked to come on board now for the appeal are the Department of Agriculture and Friends of the Earth. So the Lady Chief Justice granted both those applications this morning. So there'll now be three interveners. And the other thing that was decided this morning was that they had provisionally set aside 3 days in December, the 9th, 10th and 11th, for the appeal to be heard in Belfast. And they were just checking with council this morning whether that was manageable, and they've decided that it is or should be. So I suppose we've got the exact date now for the appeal.
Almost unbelievably, the last stumbling block was the fact that the project, a judge felt the project did not comply with Stormont's own climate action plan, that the environmental impact of the scheme had not been properly assessed or scrutinised. It was said after that this could be a hurdle that might be somewhat easy to overcome. Is that still the feeling, Niall?
Yeah, well, look, it quite possibly was. an unintended consequence of the Climate Change Act at Stormont. Certainly, I would imagine the two interveners this morning will be dealing specifically with the issues of climate change. You would imagine DERA or the Department of Agriculture would be hoping to assuage those concerns that the court had around, you know, the legalities and compliance with the Climate Change Act. Friends of the Earth may be taking another view, obviously. So, look, I'm hoping that the input of the particularly the Department of Agriculture will be helpful in that regard.
Yeah, you have to bite your tongue a little bit when we talk about sort of, you know, being friendly to the earth. And is there anything more valuable on this earth than people and their safety and what have you? But anyway, we'll watch on with interest now. Thanks very much for that briefing. We do appreciate your time. I know you were in that court this morning, so great to have access to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Niall McKenna, chair of Enough is Enough A5 campaign, and a lot of conversation about roads in and around of Letterkenny. Not sure about this one. Get rid of the mid-wall on the dual carriageway. Airlift the Blaney Bridge to Bonagie. Oh, if only were that easy. Traffic in Letterkenny is worse than Dublin. Ridiculous. Get your hands off Fannad and Surrounds Bridge, would you? They got their bridge. Worry about getting your own one. Stop trying to transport it. A caller says, look at active travel on the back road, Convent Road, College Road. Have to stop in the middle of the road to let students off. Every stepping car causes delay in traffic. Whole way out, Ballymacool, Lismonahan, Glencar, Pierce Road, Leck, even out to the four lane, believe it or not. Was the same modelling used for that's ended up mid-construction roads being changed just below me here. A caller says, I drive to Letterkenny every morning and evening. What shocks me is the amount of water lying on the roads. It's very dangerous. A man should be out with a shovel to clear the drain holes. Why can't the county council sort this out? Another, since the evenings have gotten longer, driving in the dark is more common, and I've noticed so many cars that are missing a headlight or a dip or a brake light. It really makes it even more dangerous for oncoming cars, especially when it's raining and visibility is already low. Can people check their lights are working before driving, especially at night? It's crazy the amount of cars that passed me on the way home from work the last day that were missing a light. Yep, there's a couple of things that I can't understand. A, how many people have missing lights and don't realise it? But B, and I mentioned this before, how many people have a broken back window? What's going on there? Why do so many cars have broken back windows? I'll say at least two a day. And once you start looking out for them, you'll see them everywhere. Finally, Greg, the Chamber has woken up. They are the best pressure group already in place to stop this premature development. Don't be afraid to step up on behalf of the businesses and their customers. What's going on at the Conwy Borough in Lifford? 6 months of roadworks. Okay, that's an interesting one. Greg, I do use the cycle lanes on the Port Road and they are grand as far as they go. The problem is the lanes end and depending which direction you're going, you end up interacting with traffic and roundabouts, which are very dodgy for cyclists with traffic going either side of you. I don't see too many others using it and I would use it to and from work. As for this active travel encouraging people to not use their cars, I don't think it'll make any difference. Are there people, the people who would drive into the shop door if they could? That's true. That's quite interesting. That's from a cyclist who does use those lanes, but they're a lonely cyclist because they don't see anyone else on them. A caller says, cycling on footpaths is illegal. That may be so, but try cycling through the potholes, grids and parked cars, etc. on the inside lane of nearly any Donegal road or street. It's mad, they say. Another, Letterkenny does not need traffic lights or cycle lanes. What it needs is a Bobby White who, it will, could relieve all traffic jams in the town back in the day. The Letterkenny's a very different place now, very different in terms of traffic and stuff. Everyone's in bigger cars as well. Dying is not cool, Greg, until high-vis becomes mandatory on bikes, scooters and school uniforms. Why aren't RTDs and RSA making laws on this practical life-saving solution? That, I don't know. I genuinely don't know why that isn't the case. There should be a compulsion to wear high-vis. I know there's a fella has been on with me a couple of times, is against it. That's fine, that's his view. But the bottom line is, you know, cars have to have lights. Pedestrians, I think, cyclists, I think, scooterists, I think, should have to wear high-vis. We have the lights not only to see, but to be seen. So everyone, I think, should be playing by the same rules. If you don't mind me saying so. I don't think I'm going to be up before Commissioner Man for that one, am I? All right, then, let's take a quick break. You're very welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by Cora McAleer-Harvey, who's Assistant Director of Nursing, Alcohol and Drug Services and Mental Health Services Donegal with the HSE. Cora, good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
How are you doing, Craig?
It's good to have you on the show. We're also joined by Declan Cregan, Training Officer with Gambling With Lives. Declan, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome.
It's good to have you on the show. Cora, we're speaking ahead of a couple of events that are taking place in the not too distant future. I suppose maybe just flag those events first, who they're for, and then I suppose we'll get into some of the subject matter then.
Yeah, no problem. We're talking really about the event that's coming up on the ATU on the 20th of November. It's a Thursday evening from 6 to 9, and it's open to the public. And really, it's a roadshow around health and wellbeing, Greg, covering topics such as gambling, mental health, addiction, money laundering, that type of thing. The prelude to that will be on the Wednesday for students only, but the Thursday evening is open to the wider public. And I suppose this has come off the back of a previous event we've had back in March, which was specifically for the GAA and younger people. And in fairness to Sharon Ferguson, who is the Health and Wellbeing Officer out in the ATU, she wanted to replicate something like that for the wider community audience, because the topics were so important and they're coming up in everyday life. And it's to allow the public to know what resources is there and what is the problems facing in today's issues.
Yeah, and I know as soon as we start talking about gambling on this programme, the phone lights light up, because it's an incredibly big problem, but it's so normalised, encouraged, or part of everyday life. It's even part of just watching sport or playing PlayStation games or Xbox games or whatever. It can be very hard to tackle. We'll get into that in a little bit more detail, but one of the speakers will be Declan Cregan, who I've just introduced. He's a training officer with Gambling With Lives. And Declan, I suppose very sadly, we're able to reflect on the comments from a coroner recently, you know, about the very devastating consequences of a gambling addiction.
Yeah, great, absolutely. Unfortunately, there's many cases across the UK and Ireland where people are losing their lives because of gambling harm. And this is why gambling need to be taken extremely serious, because on a daily basis, people are losing their life. It's an extremely addictive product, and it can be seen as a mental health illness. So it's so extremely important that we are doing things like what we are doing next week in ATU Letterkenny, and giving the community and our young people the right awareness around the harms and dangers of gambling.
The coroner's comments I talked of was in relation to the inquest into the death of Lee Adams. And was the finding that the coroner ruled that gambling disorder very sadly led or caused Lee Adams' death? There's a significance to that, isn't it? Because it connects, you know, it just makes an important connection in my view. Do you see that as sad as it is, as significant too, Declan?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't like to particularly pinpoint any one person, individual's, death or that. But basically, the simple fact is that people can die because of gambling-related harm. People do lose their life because of gambling-related harm. And it's a serious topic, again, across the UK and Ireland, where so many young people especially are addicted to gambling.
How important is it, Cora, to get to young people? And I suppose offer different information, because as someone who's, you know, gamed extensively over my life, you know, you'd be groomed into gambling from a very early age, you know, and I've given examples before and I won't bore listeners with them again. But, you know, in many areas of life, you're groomed into gambling. You know, part of the advertising for sport now is that it's more enjoyable if you gamble on it. And this is all allowed, like.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I suppose, you know, prevention is better than any cure, and we have to be realistic. You know, there's always going to be some form of gambling, be it at a, you know, pleasure level. But when it moves into more that, you know, severe end of gambling, it's when the harm is really caused. You know, so it is timely, I suppose, and not before time that we do have the Gambling Regulation Act back in 24, and now the new established body to look at the licensing and the safety for gaming and gambling. So that is so welcome. And it'd be great to see, you know, when their impact is felt. Because I think that whole area around player safety is of paramount importance. Like, I do think there is a duty on gaming bodies, on gambling bodies, to provide that information right at the fingertip when people do go online to game and gamble. You know, the research is quite controversial in terms of gaming, you know, being considered an illness, the like, you know, as the way gambling is. But certainly it lures people in the same way. Mm. It takes up so much time.
Yeah, but just in relation to that, sorry, I understand what you're saying. I wasn't conflating. Yeah. But if you play, say, for instance, you've got the new FIFA game now, you open player packs, right? So you don't know what you're going to get. So you earn them and then you open them. It's the same with the loot boxes on some of the games that are out there. And it just is. And I've seen it, to be honest, in my boys when they were younger. They were gambling, you know. You could see what was happening there, and it then makes it a very easy transition. And I think too, Cora, and we've seen this with 00 Booze as well. You know, some of these gambling companies exploit the gamble aware stuff, I think, the adverts, really, you know, because they're advertisements for gambling, but really on the face of it, it looks like they're being considerate and thoughtful.
Yeah, and I mean, even if when you spoke there about the case of Lee Adams, and that kind of struck me profoundly, because when I read into it, you know, it was a level of betting that he had done within 1 hour that then subsequently led him to the despair and the devastation that, you know, at the end up, you know, Lee took his own life. You know, and the inquest into that was so interesting, even looking at the response from Virgin Gaming to what their response was. And they more or less stood away from it, saying that because he was in a positive net, that they didn't see the impact it was having on his mental health. Mm. So I do think there has to be regulation around that. And when you click into any of those games, it's the lure of the free bets, the quick win, you know. And for anybody anyway vulnerable or stressed, or after maybe, you know, looking to seek more money in a quick way, it's devastating the longer term impacts. And you're so right when we talk about the young people in gaming, you know, but for me, it's a mental health impact. There has to be some parental control with that as well. But parents can't do everything, because they can't monitor it, you know, 24/7 when there's an iPhone or a Game Boy in the hands of the young person. So there has to be a responsibility to back on to the authorities that are actually, you know, promoting these products and letting them so available online.
Yeah, and parents and guardians in society needs help as well. We've seen what's happened with cigarettes. Mm-hmm. We've seen what's happening trying to keep alcohol out away from young people. And we're seeing now what's happening in terms of vaping. It's always, it feels too late. Yeah. But this industry seems so powerful that nothing ever happens. Declan Cregan, training officer with Gambling With Lives, talk to me a little bit more about the message that you'll be relating.
Yeah, so kind of we are attached to Gambling With Lives. I'm with Chapter One, and basically I'm the training engagement officer for the island of Ireland. So we provide training, information and support for everyone that's affected by gambling. So the work that included that I would do is going to schools, sports clubs, universities, and we also train professionals as well. It's about beginning the conversation, get people talking about gambling. And for people who come into contact with people who could be experiencing gambling, it's about getting the right questions and the right messaging across to these people. So hopefully they can open up and in the end get the help that they so desperately need. I suppose our Chapter One website is a great place to go and see where the signposting for people that are looking to help who are maybe experiencing harm. But as well, what I would say is a lot of people just think of the person who's gambling in this situation, but unfortunately there's so many more people who are impacted. You know, for every one person affected by gambling, there's around 6 to 10 affected others. People forget about the mums, the dads, the brothers, sisters who have to go through this horrible addiction as well, you know.
Yeah, I just worry for our young people, because gambling feels like almost an opt-out thing in this day and age. You know, it's almost like young lads and girls, you opt out of it almost, because everything that you do, everywhere you look, you're pushed into maybe it's playing poker online, bingo online, you know, betting on horses, betting on football, whatever it might be. All right, listen, thanks very much, Declan. Declan Cregan, training officer with Gambling With Lives. And I think, Cora, I'll just stay with you for a moment if that's okay. this is an addiction, and it's a very serious addiction. And as Declan rightly pointed out, it's not only the individual, but it could be the partner, that all the money's spent on payday, or it could be the mum or dad. And it's kind of invisible, and people feel isolated and a wee bit lonely on it, and maybe not as quick to realise there are supports there for this addiction, like there are, you know, smoking cessation officers or alcohol addiction services. So no harm maybe focusing on that a little bit as well, Cora.
Yeah, well, look, you know, within the HSE drug and alcohol services, you know, while it's currently termed drug and alcohol services, we do support people with gambling related harm issues as well. And there's also other community organisations like Extern, PG is a national organisation, and they have online supports, and they actually have an app as well for supports. And interestingly, when I was, you know, looking at their information, and we had their founder up doing training with us a number of years ago, Barry Grant, I think he actually might have spoken on the show as well at the time. You know, they have an app, and they would say 95% of the visitors into their website don't actually make contact, but they get help through the app. And I suppose that's kind of consistent with the whole idea of using the phones and using platforms to access gambling, but now they're also accessing help through that platform. So we have to be, you know, we have to go where the most people are going. Up in Donegal through the family resource centres, there's funded support counsellors as well for gambling. And currently, actually, as we're speaking, we're in the process of employing a dedicated gambling support worker within the Northwestern Task Force area, because we feel that we need to have just a dedicated person where we can send referrals to and also provide that wider community piece. Currently as well, we're developing, along with the task force and the ETB, a one-day train-the-trainer programme, Beyond the Bet. And Christina, our education and training officer with the task force, is currently devising that training. And we hope to deliver that out into community partners, community leaders, youth groups, schools. And the GA have also is a great partner for us, because they can reach into so many communities. So that's going to be a piece of education, a brief intervention that we want, you know, people who are able to deliver it, that they'll have the information at their fingertips. And that program is only one day, and it will empower people then to go back into their communities to talk about gambling related harm, to signpost into local services, to look at the current landscape and gambling landscape, and to look at signs and symptoms of gambling. So look, it's many prongs, I suppose, to this approach. It's not a one size fits all, but we do have to upskill the workforce in tackling gambling related harm. And it's not always full blown counselling. Sometimes it's that, you know, early education, that awareness raising, that when you tap onto that phone or start into that betting, that it can just go over the line a wee bit. You can cross that line very quickly.
Yeah, indeed you can. And then, such is the nature of it, then you start chasing. And that's why gambling works so successfully. You don't see many poor companies involved in this. So we're absolutely clear then. The roadshow at the ATU in Donegal on Wednesday, the 19th of November, students 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, have you reached out to schools that you know who's already going? Is there a call out there, Cora, or what's the story?
No, for the ATU event on the 19th, it is for the students of the ATU.
Of ATU, perfect. Okay, yeah, so they know where it's at. Okay.
Yeah, and also just to stress, on the evening of the 19th, or the 20th, sorry, it is over 18s as well. It's 18 plus, because we do be so careful around our messaging and the targeting of information.
Yeah.
So that evening is 18 plus as well.
Okay, so I think it's great to get into at that age, actually, into the AT students, and I understand why there's the age bracket there. That's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I'm sure there'll be a great interest in that. And then on Thursday the 20th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m, open to the public over 18s, but you can still go and get information and permeate it down. Is that also an ATU, and is that just a turn up on the day? Do you have to pre-register, or what's the story?
No, you can turn up on the day, and it's open to the wider community. It's just hosted by the ATU. But the people running the event would be HSE, Community and Voluntary, the Gardaí, and there'll be different services there with presentation and stands. So that is open to the public over 18. Turn up on the evening and register. It's like a roadshow, so there'll be different workshops on in the evening too. So people do not have to feel like embarrassed, or why are they going into one workshop? They can go between the four of them, so they can get into all the events that are covered. So it's a great way of just kind of getting your own knowledge and improving your knowledge around the services.
Yeah, and it really is genuinely encouraging to see that we're actually progressing in terms of dealing with this crisis,
which I think so.
People can often feel left behind
in,
and I don't know why that is, but they often can feel that gambling is not seen as drugs or alcohol or other addictions. It's just...
Yeah, absolutely, because even though we're aware of the problems for a long, long time, it's only in the last number of years that we've even started recording the treatment episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the prevalence of treatment, you know, so it's a fairly new space even for us that work in treatment, you know, so we are constantly looking at, you know, how is the best way to intervene, what is the best age to intervene, you know, and how we're going to reach the bigger audience and get the best outcome.
Thank you very much. And if anyone wants any further information on any of this, obviously the hse.ie, Gamblers Anonymous, they have a website, gamblersanonymous.ie. You can search out Gambling Lives. I know they're very interested in promoting the Chapter 1 element of their work, which is a new program working with schools and sports organisations and dealing with gambling. That's all out there. Thanks, Cora. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye. That's Cora McAleer-Harvey there, Assistant Director of Nursing, Alcohol and Drug Service, Mental Health Service, Donegal HSE. Right. We'll be back with the weather forecast shortly. Time for a short shop shock of Madeline Delaney, CEO of the Charities Regulator, because we've a few minutes, Madeline, to let people know that it's not too late to register for an event in Donegal Town tonight.
That's right, Greg. Good morning, everybody. We're hosting an event tonight as part of our Charities Trustee Week programme. It's in Donegal Town. There's still tickets available if you wish to attend in person, but you can also attend online. And all you need to do is go to our website at charitiesregulator.ie.
Yeah, and there's updated guidance there as well. So whilst this might be, for new people going into this position, no harm for refreshers, and just to make sure you're fully across all the guidance that's out there.
Absolutely, yes. With about 76,000 charity trustees in Ireland, there's a lot of volunteers out there who are critical to the success of the charity sector and who deliver the activities, supports and services in all our communities. They are the volunteers. They might also be known as board members, directors or committee members, and they are responsible for the control and management of charities. So we're inviting all existing charity trustees to come along and anybody who's interested in becoming a charity trustee.
Yeah, and because of the work that you do, there's a wealth of knowledge there in terms of what are the common questions that people might have. Now, there is a Q&A opportunity as well to dig into that or ask questions that aren't covered by the Director of Compliance, Thomas Mulholland. But it means that you can hit the ground running, can't you, Madeline? This is, all relevant information.
It is very much so. And in our recent survey, some of the hot topics that trustees are looking for more supports on are the areas of governance and also what their duties and responsibilities are. So we'll take this opportunity to set out for them in as simple terms as possible what those duties are and what we expect from them. We also want to explain to them, I suppose, that, you know, regulation is about more than, you know, chasing after people because they've done wrong. A lot of what we do is about setting standards of governance so that charity trustees know what they need to do to fulfill their duties, but also for their charity to be run effectively and to be successful into the future.
Which is what most trustees want, obviously.
It is what trustees want, exactly. And most of them are very successful at that. We find that charities work very hard to be compliant with their obligations while delivering, as I say, on their services and activities. But sometimes it does go wrong, Greg. That's what happens in life. And when it does, we will then intervene with them. But our engagement is purely to help them ascertain what has happened and then to put them back on the right track. So I suppose a big message I would have today is to tell charity trustees to engage with us. Don't be afraid to come and talk to us, to look at the materials on our website. And if they have a query or a concern, to make contact with us directly.
Right, it's a one-hour commitment tonight. You can attend in person by getting along to the beautiful Abbey Hotel just on the Diamond there in Donegal Town. You can go through the Charities Regulator website to get access
via Zoom. Yes.
And as we mentioned, Thomas Mulholland, Director of Compliance, will be sharing his insights and also questions and answer sessions by trustees from two Donegal charities. They're going to share their insights and experiences of being a trustee. I think we did it, Madeline. I think we plugged the living daylights out of that in a couple of minutes.
Well done, Greg. Thank you.
Are we happy?
Yes.
Look after
just
yourself.
A big thank you to all the charity trustees out there. And for anybody else who's thinking about it, please come along.
All right. Look after yourself, Madeline. Great to see you again. That's Madeline Delaney there, CEO of the Charities Regulator. And that's where we have to leave it on the programme for today. Is it? Do I have a time for a comment? I'm not sure I do. But what I have time for to tell you is that we were inundated with comments today, which is great. You know, the more comments we get, the more we understand exactly what's important to you. So we really do appreciate it. And any comments that we didn't get to will carry over into the next live show. If you're listening to the podcast or the overnight, don't be afraid to send us an email, comments@highlandradio.com or WhatsApp 086 60 25000. We'll pick that up and carry it into the next live show. But that's where we leave it for today.